This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. It's Entrepreneur Friday. Women in the boardroom and how to get more of them in there. Buffalo Wild Wings has another big challenge. Well, CEO of a major clothing retailer stepping down. We'll tell you who and why. That's coming up in our next segment. Right now, the latest reading of consumer sentiment is out. While the chairman of the Federal Reserve has been sending signals lately, we're joined to talk about it by David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors, based in Denver. David, let's begin, if we can, in talking about China and tariffs. As Elisa just mentioned, the president kind of pouring a little cold water on the idea of anything significant happening now. Really, until we have a deal and it is signed, is really nothing to get overly excited about.
Well, it is. Nothing to, you know, hope for immediately. But I think if you look at the big picture, it's better news than we had been seeing before, at least the beginnings of some agreement on trade with China. The Fed had really been worried about the drag on the economy from those trade tensions. Business spending was down, and the Fed is beginning to worry about that. But I do think the Fed sees a more favorable view, as I do, gradually at least, on trade. And that comes with some other good news. Consumer sentiment was up in the latest reading. And we really have to go back to those October jobs figures that came out at the beginning of the month. They were better than expected. Market psychology improved. The stock market shot up, and most importantly, that unemployment rate's at 3.6%, which will boost consumer spending. So we've got some good news on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, do we see sort of hope that a better consumer sentiment leads to more spending? Is there necessarily a connection there, or in general, hey, if you're feeling better, you're likelier to spend a little cash?
That's exactly right. You answered the question perfectly. If you feel better about the outlook, you're likely to spend. There's not a perfect correlation there, but there is some relationship, and that's good news on the consumer side. The consumer held up well in the third quarter when we got that GDP number at 1.9%, running at about the trend in the economy. And that's the other thing with regard to the Fed. I think they see the economy coming out this year at 2% growth. That's down from almost 3% last year, but it's still in line with trends. So my bet is the Fed will be on pause after those three Fed rate cuts this year.
And is that, you getting a sense from Jerome Powell, that's sort of what he's trying to signal here?
That's exactly right. He was fairly straightforward on that point. He, as long as this expansion continues about at trend growth, as long as we're getting somewhat better news on the trade front, And that consumer is hanging in there. Remember, that consumer is 70% of the economy. I think the Fed is satisfied with where they are right now.
Always good analysis. Thank you. David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors, based in Denver, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. Coming up just ahead, the latest corporate CEO departure involves a struggling clothing retailer, Gap Chief Executive Art Peck stepping down after a rough four-year run. The stock is down 7% today after the announcement. Let's find out what prompted the move. Jan Rogers Niffen, CEO of J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide, based in New York. Jan, I'm going to guess, you know, today's stock is down 7%, but it's the fact that the stock has been down increasingly is probably what's leading to him being gone.
Continuing bad reports, and the solution, he thought, was to split the company into two different separate publicly traded companies, one of them being the Gap, the other one being Old Navy, basically. And I don't think any of us thought that was the solution to making everything better. There's dyssynergies when you do that. There's additional costs. And the real question is, was it so undervalued in Old Navy being inside of Gap? Well, since that decision was made, Old Navy quit performing as well. They've been running negative store-for-store sales. So it's just been a very tough run for him. I'm not sure that there was a real solution that somebody else would have been able to come in and execute. They've already closed a lot of stores. They've made a lot of changes. But things just haven't gotten better. It's pretty tough to be a mall-based retailer today, which is Gap, what Gap really is. Old Navy less so. And their performance has been better as well. But there's no real synergies there, and we didn't really get anything going great with Banana Republic. That's led us too little to have mattered very much, and so it couldn't change the trajectory either. I'm not surprised he's gone. I'm kind of surprised he lasted as long as he did, because I know he was tight with the family, the Fisher family, that owns so much of the stock. So I think that probably insulated him, but the performance was pretty poor.
Any chance that this means that split of Old Navy will not happen, or is that just too far down the road?
No, I'd be very surprised if that split happens. The board's supposed to meet in, I think, a couple of weeks now to actually make that decision. And my guess is, with Art out, that they will probably not make the decision to do that. I don't see what the benefit would be now that Old Navy's not performing very well either. I just don't think there would be value to be had there. And there's a lot of brain damage to be had when you go to split these companies up. So I suspect they will not split up.
Now, you have, obviously, you mentioned in their portfolio, some significant names, a lot of name equity, really respected brands. What's the secret to getting this going again? I mean, is it maybe selling your products in other stores or different venues? I mean, you've talked a lot about retail, bricks and mortar, really struggling, obviously.
Well, it's true. They do have, like, Athleta's a really good brand. They should have grown it a lot faster because Lululemon owns that space. And even though that's been a good brand, it's been well-received, there was no growth there. And then Banana Republic has been struggling, gosh, for as long as I can remember, and they've not been able to bring what is a really a great brand as far as brand equity. People know what it is. Never been able to get it going. Old Navy was the only one that really was performing, and it, of course, is also the youngest of the group. But it's struggling pretty tough out there in the world of online retailing. It's really tough in apparel retailing. They've got to play in both of those spaces because that's really what they are. They're just a big apparel retailer. And it's just a very, very difficult space, and the names are old, and it's going to be hard to reinvigorate them to get the consumer excited about it. Can they keep going? Yes. Can they survive? Yes. But I don't see how you bring those brands back into real prominence.
So what do you think? I mean, what are they looking for then in another CEO? I mean, it's got to be someone who's willing to try some things to get it going.
That is exactly what I said to myself. Okay, they've gotten rid of the guy who didn't make things get better. Who out there could you find who would know how to make things better? And I can't come up with what that solution is. Clearly, you have to reinvigorate those old great brands, but there's plenty of people out there trying to reinvigorate brands that aren't performing as well as they did prior to the internet taking over the world. I just don't see what you do to bring it back to its old prominence. Now you're just sort of in a caretaker mode.
Yeah, if someone could do it, then they would already be employed by another retailer doing it there.
They certainly would, or else they're just somebody that's really on the cusp of being a merchant prince, and we don't know who they are yet.
Yeah, right.
We'll be
exactly.
Lucky to find that person.
Yeah, they'll be a billionaire for sure. Yeah. Thank you. Jan Rogers Niffin, CEO of J. Rogers Niffin Worldwide, based in New York. Up next, breaking down Mayor Lightfoot's proposed rideshare congestion tax. How much of it is actually going to go toward making transit better?
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
We're learning more about how a proposed rideshare congestion tax in Chicago would be distributed. Let's get some details from Greg Hines, a columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Greg, all right, so this congestion tax, this is, help us understand, it's Uber and Lyft, right, that are going to be taxed more?
There's other companies, but those are the big giants in that particular field. Yeah, and the mayor wants to, she says we want to curb congestion downtown, and we need some more money to shore up the city's budget, with a little bit going to the CTA to help them out, so she wants to raise taxes.
So it's how much of it's going to end up going to the city, just to sort of help balance the budget, as opposed to maybe helping to ease congestion?
At this point, the vast bulk of the $40 million that would come in would go directly to the city treasury. The city already gives about $16 million a year to CTA. They would get somewhat more, about $20 million more over some years. But the mayor says she needs to take care of her budget hole first, which is, you know, she's probably right about that.
Yeah, so she's going to obviously look to get money from multiple places, and the congestion tax is just one of them. She's getting some pushback, though, from some people in the community, not just Uber and Lyft drivers.
Yeah, she is. Nobody likes to be taxed, but in this case, a coalition of black ministers held a press conference at City Hall the other day. They said, hey, that Uber and Lyft serve their communities a lot better than taxi cabs didn't. There were, for years, there were reports, credible reports, that the cabbies wouldn't go into certain neighborhoods. And the minister said, hey, don't tax these guys. They're coming in. We think, you know, you got to let them go. But the Uber people have kind of seized on that as an argument to fight against the entire tax concept at all, even though the vast bulk of the money here would come not from taxes on in neighborhoods. It would come from trips to and from downtown, where there's already pretty good public transportation service. They'd be hit with an extra tax of up to $3 a ride.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, any tax is going to cause problems. It doesn't really matter how much or what exactly it's going toward.
Yeah, there's a real famous saying in the tax business from King Louis XIV's finance minister, a guy named Flaubert, who has once said to have famously said that the secret to taxation is to find the goose that squawketh the least and pluck it.
You know, I want to ask you, I'm assuming that nothing's been said about this, but just the other day, earlier this week, I'm in a cab talking with a cabbie about congestion, and he says, you know, look at all these empty bus lanes and bike lanes here downtown. They keep talking about the drivers, but there's other factors, too.
You know, when you carve aside, this is one where a public official isn't going to win. When you carve aside a special room for bikes and buses, people in cars, you can say, well, we ought to have that. But if you talk to the bikers, they'd say, hey, driving around the city is dangerous. People get killed. They have been killed. There was another story in the paper today about somebody who was killed who was ironically using a bike lane. And if you ask people to ride buses, they say, hey, if the thing gets caught in traffic, we have to stop. It takes me forever. Why should I take the bus? So let's create a dedicated lane. I know what the intention here is. It's good, and it's designed to make the city available and accessible by more than internal combustion automobiles. But whether the city has struck the right balance or not is something we're going to argue about probably forever.
When it comes down to it, I just want what's best for me, right? I mean, isn't that sort of everyone's take on this?
Yeah, and from my perspective here. One of the concerns about the growth of Uber and Lyft, they certainly have a market. A lot of people like to use them, but it really is hard to get around downtown now, and they've begun to hurt the CTA's business a lot. And if trends continue the way they are, you know, 10 years down the road, the CTA could be a shell of what it is now. They could get rid of a lot of their bus routes. I don't think that's good for anybody, because, you know, a lot of people have the money to spend on Uber and Lyft. That's great. If they want to do that, that's fine. But I think the fair public policy question is, should this come at significant harm to the public transportation service that serves everybody that we all pay taxes to support?
Always good analysis. Thank you. Greg Hines, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Still ahead, Entrepreneur Friday, helping women achieve their highest professional goal.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A national restaurant chain is dealing with a tragic accident in the workplace on the heels of a racial incident in the Chicago suburbs. We'll discuss how companies deal publicly in these types of situations. In Entrepreneur Friday, we meet the founder and CEO of a company that helps women make their way onto corporate boards. Mayor Lightfoot's choice for interim police superintendent is the former chief in Los Angeles, Acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney skips a scheduled deposition in the House impeachment inquiry. On Wall Street, the Dow down 38. NASDAQ is up 13, and the S&P is flat. Oil is also flat today. Sunshine throughout the day. High right about freezing right now. 29 degrees in Chicagoland. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are mixed, but pretty much along the flat line. Let's see what's going on. Paul Nolte is joining us, portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management here in Chicago. Paul, what do you make of what you're seeing today?
It's been a quiet day, ending up a quiet week, and what we, if we hang here, we will be up 5 weeks in a row for the S&P. So it's really done very well here as we've gotten into the fourth quarter, and I think a lot of it is more earnings-driven than it is news-driven at this point. And even trade, we've heard a little bit from Trump and about trade this week and Xi, and that really hasn't moved the markets. I think the markets are starting to get a little tired of the on-again, off-again trade talks, trade agreement that may or may not be signed sometime soon.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, you just have to wait until there's actually a deal, right? Because whether it's a tweet or an interview or some sort of a source revealing something, it's just a lot of back and forth. How do you invest based on that?
You don't. And that's why you have to look at the companies themselves. You have to look at the economy. And that really ultimately is what's going to be driving the markets, both higher or lower. And right now, the U.S. is continuing to grow at a decent pace. The earnings numbers have been coming in generally pretty good. And so we're seeing a market that has generally been rising over the last 3-4 weeks here as we've gone through earnings season. So earnings have actually come in a little bit better than the very bad expectations that we had coming into the quarter, hence the higher market.
You expect that to continue based on the forward guidance that companies have been giving?
The forward guidance has been muddled at best, and again, it's related to trade. But when you take a look at the companies as a whole, they're doing okay. A lot of the reason that companies or the stocks are higher is because a lot of companies have been buying back stock. So if you take that out, earnings have been generally flat for the last couple of years, but the stock buybacks have boosted stock prices over periods of time.
Let's talk about the gap. The CEO is out. The stock down, last I checked here a few minutes ago, about 7% today. What do you make of that?
There is nothing good going on at the Gap. They miss same-store sales. Their flagship, Old Navy, that they're going to be spinning out, came in below expectations. They kind of set the table the first half of the year that the back half was going to be very good. So they really closed some stores, repositioned themselves. So it was a big disappointment this quarter to see them really kind of missing in all of the areas that Wall Street was looking for, and the main reason why the stock is down as much as it is here today.
And just shows the challenge in general with apparel retailers. A lot of competition, still a lot of bricks and mortar. It seems like a combination in online and bricks and mortar is going to end up being the winner, but it's just really tough now.
It is, and certainly any retailer, and this has been true for decades, is it depends on the fashion. And you either have the right mix or your mix is a little bit off. And if it's a little bit off, you're not going to do well in that particular environment. So it can be running hot and cold depending upon the mix that you have in the store.
Another story stock today is Disney, a good report, and its stock is up a little over 3% today.
And that's the flip side. They're hitting on all cylinders at this point. Certainly Lion King has helped. They've got some more coming out. The big push has been for Disney Plus. And what we saw in the earnings report is they're spending a lot of money, time, and effort to get that ramped up. Their expectations are that it should be break-even 2022, maybe 2023. And their expectation is that they're going to meet those numbers. They're coming out with a huge category or library of stuff that they're going to be able to put out onto the Disney Plus channels that should provide that revenue going forward. So overall, very good report, hitting all the numbers and expectations for Wall Street.
Yeah, Disney, with its portfolio, I mean, it seems like of all the companies, just a natural to really do well, especially with the loyalty of those Disney customers.
It is, and they also have Fox now. They've partnered with Amazon to provide Disney Plus. So, you know, they have more than just what you and I think of as Disney. They have a lot more in their catalog than that, plus the partnerships that they're building now with some of the other content providers, I think is going to help them out immensely. It's going to provide a big challenge for Netflix going forward, and part of the reason why Netflix has been not doing as well in recent weeks.
Yeah, that stock certainly has been struggling. Thank you, Paul Nolte, Portfolio Manager at Kingsview Asset Management here in Chicago. Up next, Entrepreneur Friday, helping women advance into the corporate suite.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, the spotlight is on helping women advance in their corporate careers. We welcome Sheila Ronning, CEO and founder of Women in the Boardroom, based in New York. Sheila, good to have you with us. Why don't you begin by telling us, what is Women in the Boardroom?
Well, thanks for having me. We work with senior-level executive women, and whether they're looking for their first, second, or third corporate board seat, we help them get there.
So how do you help them get there? What exactly is the process?
Well, everybody's different, of course, and these women are already, they're definitely qualified. They're board ready, I should say. We work with them on making sure that they're packaging themselves correctly, branding themselves, and also helping them with their ask, because a lot of them are not comfortable in asking for help.
What have you found are some of the impediments, some of the things that are keeping these women that you're saying they're already qualified? What are some of the things maybe keeping them from getting there on their own?
They're not sure of what that path is. Women tend to like to know the entire path and make sure they check every box before they go for something. So a lot of times they're holding themselves back. So we work with them on that. That's really the big key. They want to know that big picture. They need to hear that they're qualified.
And are you finding among corporate boards an openness to consider these women and any sort of pushback at all? Or are you really finding that there is a market for this sort of talent?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. I'm asked all the time, are men holding women back? And my answer is absolutely not. It's women themselves.
So elaborate on that. How are they holding themselves back?
Well,
you say they want the path. What else?
Yeah. I mean, they might feel like, oh gosh, I need to get another degree. I need to be certified. Or do I really have the right skill set? And it's just the unknown of what actually happens in the boardroom. So they're not putting themselves out there, or they're going to their network and putting themselves in a mentor-mentee role versus asking for that connection.
So give us, I realize, like you said, everyone's different. Give us sort of a general profile on a woman who might not be on a board, but is eminently qualified and maybe should consider going through the process here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if they are, if they're in charge of a budget, they manage a group of people, or they're, one of the decision makers on investments for the company. I mean, a lot of times those are those senior roles, no more than a couple of levels down from the CEO.
So what's your experience? I mean, where is it that you got this know-how to help women do this?
Well, I started it in 2002, and it was more so that I was, creating different events that were helpful to the community, and a mentor of mine had brought this idea to me and said, hey, would love for you to put an event that helped women get onto corporate boards, and did that for many years and eventually rolled it into the membership platform it is today, so we can work one-on-one with them.
So when it comes to people who aren't on boards, pretty much the encouragement would be, hey, check it out, see, maybe you're not there yet, but maybe you are and just don't know it.
Right, exactly. That's absolutely true. And I mean, a lot of people will say too, serve on a nonprofit board first, and that may or may not help them get there. But there's certain things I always say to check the box for if you're going to do that.
Thanks so much. Really good information. Sheila Ronning, CEO and founder of Women in the Boardroom, helping to get more women in corporate boardrooms. Still to come, how major companies deal with public relations adversity. Buffalo Wild Wings, it's having more trouble. It's been a rough couple of weeks for Buffalo Wild Wings, a racial incident at one of the chain's restaurants here in Naperville, and the death of a worker at a location outside of Boston last night. Let's discuss how companies handle these types of situations. Tom Serafin is joining us, founder and CEO of Serafin and Associates here in Chicago. Tom, is sort of a double dose here for Buffalo Wild Wings. How do they handle it? How does a company respond?
Well, good morning. Good afternoon. You have to do it with speed. You have to get quickly to the issue, and then you have to resolve it. So it's a 7:24 job today in communications. And I think Buffalo Wild Wings has done a pretty good job. You know, they got right to the issue. They dismissed those employees. And they talked about their respect, company-wide respect program. Although they're talking about doing a regional effort to reestablish that respect program, they probably should do it nationally. They really make a footprint. But this whole incident is, a real storybook about how you should go about doing these things and how quickly you need to get to it. I'm impressed that they got to it as quickly as they did.
And then you have this news story that comes out about an employee who died and several of them got ill. They were just using a cleaner, a chemical around the restaurant. This is going on outside Boston. That's sort of a tougher one because they don't yet know exactly what happened.
No, they don't have any idea. And that's Burlington, you know, in Massachusetts. And unfortunately, the employees did get sick and they did pass away. But they haven't, you know, on this particular incident, they haven't removed that cleaner. At least we haven't been told publicly that that cleaner has been set aside until further chemical analysis can be taking place. So I think what they should do on something like that, obviously, probably internally, I would suspect they're doing it externally. They need to let everybody know that that cleaning fluid, whatever it is taken off the shelf and put on the side until we get further analysis, and work very closely with authorities. And out there in Burlington, they turn it over to the authorities to investigate. But I think the company does have to have some kind of fingerprints on this thing and do what they've done here in Naperville and be more aggressive on that issue. That's an interesting one because it hasn't done as effectively with speed as it was done in Naperville.
Yeah, and it's a situation where obviously this chemical is being used all over the place, and so it may be something unique to that particular building, the location, the amount of airflow, and that sort of thing. I mean, we won't know until later, yet Buffalo Wild Wings can't just wait around.
No, they can't. Hazmat crew went in there and responded to the restaurant and declared it safe. However, if you have that chemical being used in other facilities, you want to be very careful about it. You let your customers and especially the employees know you care enough. You put it aside. There's always another cleaning fluid to use in this world today. So put that aside, clean house, and start over again. That's the most important aspect when somebody gets ill in a situation like that. Make sure you work with the authorities 110%. Make sure you clean house, start over again, and make sure your employees know their safety is paramount.
Tom Serafin, thanks for being with us. Tom is founder and CEO of Serafin & Associates. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour, at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.